We are, thank you, Adam, for the presentation. I think that it is a concrete example of what we mean with the work to be done for participating to the linked data space. So I think that your experience can be reused to produce the guidelines that we are expecting to produce in WP2. But now we eventually come to the final session of the conference. The idea of this round table is that Europeana is entering a new phase, as we heard in the opening speeches this morning. And entering this phase means also to face some opportunities and challenges. So we thought that it would have been interesting to pose some questions to our participants to this round table. And I prepared a list of questions that I'm going to ask to each of the participants. But then if there are additional comments that the other participants want to add, you are free to add your comments. But I think that this discussion, this open conversation should demonstrate that not everything is already done, already decided for Europeana. And so it is the right time for the cultural institutions and all the participants to the digital cultural heritage in Europe to contribute to the success of this initiative. So, the first question. We heard this morning from Harry that the strategy that Europeana uses is aggregation. And so my first question is to Börje Justrell from the National Archives in Sweden, about which is your view on the policies that should govern such aggregation.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's on, yeah. First of all, I think aggregation is of crucial importance, because what is needed here is to catch and also keep the interest of the end user, and also do it over time. It means that the success that we have today also shall be a success in the future, and for that we need actually a good aggregation policies. There are three, maybe more, but at least three unbalances that I would like to stress here. First of all, which was mentioned also during speeches here, is an unbalance between countries. When it's come to Europeana, especially, we can see that. I'm from Sweden, and Sweden is actually number 4 or 5 aggregator to Europeana. We are 9 million inhabitants living out in the forest of Northern Europe. So my question is, where are the rest? Where is Greece? Where is Italy? Where is Malta? And all those countries that I read about in my history books. I think it's important that for Europeana to fulfill its role as the access point to the European culture, heritage, content, that all countries have a fair representativity in Europeana. I think it's important to have that. Secondly, I think it's an imbalance also between different culture heritage institutions on national level, and also between these institutions and the end users of their material and information. There need to be, so to speak, equal conditions for the content holders, the archives, the libraries, and the museums. There should be equal conditions to provide information, or content in this case. DCNet, which you will hear more about tomorrow or on Friday, is handling a part of this matter, the infrastructure. But there are also other aspects, the finance, competences, other accepted standards, etc., etc. And this is things that you need to have in mind when you are looking upon the aggregation, actually. The third is more a risk, and it's more something maybe for the Commission to think about. There, I see it's a risk for an imbalance between projects and continually working production processes for digitization. And that is my experience being in a number of European projects over the years, that it's very easy that you have a good project with a good result, but who take up the results and go on and working with it. So there's always a risk that also in this case that you are aggregating information, but that would be after that just something empty. You need to keep it together. So for projects like Linked Heritage, but also for other projects, it's important to also transfer the work that will be done in the project and the lessons learned that you have in the project into routines that can also be possible to use in the future. In the best of worlds, it should be some sort of backbone, national cultural backbone, actually. And for that, we can see, and this in the Linked Heritage now, we have a special work package for training, which is essential here. And we can also see, which you will probably hear about more tomorrow, that in the ECNET, we actually added training into the projects when we saw this. And I think that is very, very important when you look into aggregation, because aggregation is not just here and now. It's something that's had to go on, and you need to have some sort of continuity also in the kind of material that you put into this kind of portals. So these are the three points that I would like to stress here. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other comment from the other participants? Yeah?
I think that they're all good points. The one I'd like to comment on is the a very good point, how to sustain aggregation. And I think you're absolutely right in saying that, you know, projects are, you know, temporary interventions almost by nature. And we need to find a way to sustain it. I think there are two ways. One is, like you're saying, building in knowledge transfer as part of the project. Europeana will also be playing a role there. We're trying to do more of that and collecting all that material in good places. I think secondly, and that's maybe something more on a EC level, but also the member states, etc., national initiatives seem to be very strong way forward. We see good things in France already, in Spain, the Netherlands is coming up, in Germany. I think to me that is a very sustainable path towards the future.
Yeah. Thank you. It seems that there is a role for the coordination between European and the national initiatives and to go ahead in this direction. Second question. We heard this morning that facilitate, distribute, engage, in addition to aggregate, are the four main tracks for the development of Europeana. And this need the development of new and innovative services. So I would like to put a question to Christophe Dessau from the French Ministry of Culture about which is your vision towards these new services.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm Christophe. So I would like to say that I'm working, I'm in the Ministry of Culture and Communication in France, where I'm in charge of the coordination of politics regarding research, higher education in the field of culture and technologies. So I'm in charge of the National Plan for Digitization and also for the development of technological innovation in this area. And I'm also responsible president of the Michael Culture Association, which gathers some partners from member states in this area of digitization. Going back to the question, I would like to to say this relates also to the value chain of digitization. I would say the value chain of digitization goes from digitization, which is the first step. Then you have a second step, which is the enrichment of content. This means metadata, description, with standards, etc. The third step is putting the content online, it's online access. Then you have a fourth step, which will be aggregation. And then the fifth steps, when you have done all this, you are able to valorize and reuse your content. So I think we have in this value chain of digitization, we have a tremendous achievements in all the four first steps, thanks to the efforts of the member states for digitization, thanks to the efforts also of the European Commission for aggregating all that at European level and developing aggregation and in Europeana. Thanks also to the projects, to Linkheritage, to Athena, etc. And we of course have a lot more to do in this field. This is why we launched Linkheritage today. So this is kind of introduction. But to be able to really fulfill the role of Europeana, and this role was very much reminded this morning by Harris, quoting the conclusions of the Council of Ministers from 2008, the role is democratization of culture and building new services for the public, then we have to go beyond the aggregation, beyond the online access. And this is where I think innovation has to play a role. We have to consider that the value we have in Europeana, that we have from the aggregation of all this content, in that we have, like it was already said this morning, all the information in one place. This is something that allows us now to build links between these contents, to build intelligence, like a layer of intelligence on this content, and also to build real multilingualism. This is something that is maybe not enough developed so far. I mean, real multilingualism, this is something we can implement thanks to the amount of content we have now. As far as innovation, valorization of these contents, the next steps, the fifth step of the value chain of innovation, I think the idea would be very much to be present in the digital environments that the public uses now, meaning mobile services, 3D enhanced experiences, virtual tools, augmented reality, collaborative tools, all this kind of new services where people are active and collaborate and interact with the content. And so to achieve that, I think we have organized the cooperation between different kind of stakeholders. Because I think innovation can only come from a tripod, and this tripod is made from one side by the content. The content is something we have made accessible through Europeana. The second part of the tripod is the cultural institutions, I mean the professionals acting in the cultural institution that know about their content, that have that know how to disseminate it to the public, to present it to the public. And the third part of the tripod would be the technologies, the technological innovation. And to be able to produce innovation, we have to make these three areas interact together. I mean, making content available alone is not enough. Cultural professionals are not IT professionals, they cannot work alone. And IT professionals cannot do anything without content or without cultural, I mean the actual professional to disseminate or to build new experiences about cultural content. I think we have already some experiments in this field of innovation. We have to maybe to look more in depth. We have the presentation made by Harry this morning of Hack for Culture, which were some very interesting, I think, inspiring experience. In France, we have launched an experience called Culture Labs, where we have supported 60 projects in all areas of culture in order to create new services, 3D services, mobile services, etc. With this kind of cooperation I was mentioning with the three parts of the tripod. We have also the European projects that can help us to do so. In DCNet, for example, we have worked a lot about the new services, not for the general public, but for researchers. This is something that also we have to take in consideration. And I would like also to mention the work we are trying to do in the Michael project go more in depth in what was already done in Minerva to disseminate good practices in the innovation. I remember that we were in Budapest last November when we organized a workshop about innovation with presenting some innovation, some experiences coming from culture labs from Kitchen Budapest or from Israel. And we will be organizing other workshop in cooperation with Indicate in December. All of this, I would like to stress that all of this has to be the contribution of culture to the knowledge society, which is the next horizon for us. And I think it is very inspiring, very important for us that Europeana and the digitalization of culture has been integrated in the European digital agenda, because that shows how culture can contribute to the growth and contribute to this knowledge society that will be the future of Europe. Well, thank you.
Any other comment on the new services?
Yes. I would like to say something about what Christophe said, because Christophe mentioned Michael. I would like to underline that closer integration between Michael and Europeana could create benefits for Europeana, because also in improving the quality, because considering the approach of Michael, so Michael approached the digital cultural content from the side of the collections, and so this is very important, because the collection make the contextualization of the objects in a collection, and this is what probably so far in Europeana is missed. So the link between the object and the collection, the contextualization of the object in the frame of a more general collection. And I think that this is also another tool for improving the quality of Europeana. So we discussed many times about this integration, but I think that the time to go more to put in practice what we said and discussed many times. Do you agree?
Any other comment? Okay, so now we move to another subject. It is a sort the questions are not directly linked the one to the other, but as we see, there is a lot to be said in terms of the future of Europeana. So now This morning we heard talking about the phase three of Europeana, that is the vision, not the next phase, but even the later. And we heard that in order to implement the phase three, there is something that is necessary, which is an evolution of the licenses and the agreements for providing licenses by the content providers. And this is necessary to run the new services. So I would like to ask to Rossella Caffo, who is the project manager of Linked Heritage and all the other projects we run in these years, which is your opinion about the feasibility of this change and how the cultural institutions are expected to react to such a request.
Very good question, and it's important. So, first of all, I would like to say that I speak on behalf of national experience, because I manage and I am responsible for the Cultura Italia, the Italian portal for culture, which is in fact the main contributor of the Italian content to Europeana. And so I base my remarks on the experience achieved in working in cooperation with many Italian institutions, libraries, museums and archives. First consideration is is a general consideration. The European license is CC0, is a new license. But I would like also to remind you that the Creative Commons license already in use are compliant with national legislation, and this results was achieved in a process lasted many years in we worked in close cooperation with the legislative bodies in order and institutions and the legislative bodies in order to have an acknowledgement of these licenses, and these licenses in fact achieved this acknowledgement and are compliant with the national legislation, and this is very important. And Europeana should take in consideration that also this new license have been submitted to this process. Considering the relationships with the institutions, we can say that in Italy only a few institutions know the matter. Libraries, the National Library of Florence, the National Library of Venice, and some universities. And we posed the question to this kind of institutions that know the matter. What was the reaction? The reaction was, in theory, we agree, but we want to know in practice what this means, what is the results, what is the impact, what are the effects of these new licenses. And secondly, another question underlined by these institutions was, we don't want to lose the control on our data. But we have a large number of institutions that don't know the matter, that don't know what is the Creative Commons licenses and so on. And in this moment, we are afraid to pose the question, to those institutions, because the risk is that they decide to take out their content from Europeana. And so this is at the moment the situation. The content provider to Cultura Italia, they signed an agreement which is more restricted than the Creative Commons license share alike. And it was a very hard work to convince them to sign, to subscribe this kind of a license. So for many other, I'm afraid that if we pose the question, they decide to take out the content, and this is true for public, for private content provider. But we have a huge problem with the Catholic Church, because please consider that the Italian cultural heritage, the majority, a big part of the Italian cultural heritage is owned by the Catholic Church. And so and a lot of content in Europeana is come from the Catholic Church. So in conclusion, I would like to invite Europeana to be careful in this matter, and probably to take more time for this kind of decision, because is the process to convince the institutions to make aware about the importance and the benefits is a long way, is a long and hard work.
Thank you, Rosella. Any additional comment?
Maybe just an initial reaction before yours. No, I think the comments are appreciated. The debates, pros and cons, are actually so fierce once in a while that it is indeed religious almost. I didn't know the church played such an important role in this discussion, but we've heard over the past 6 months lots of arguments. You know, pro, con, I think we're well aware of most of it. Attribution is one of the most important ones. Will I lose control over the data? Indeed. Another one is potential loss of income, which you hear mostly from museums and the commercial sector, which is also appreciated. There are also comments about, you know, is it even legal? Do I have the authority to give this license over this material? All of this we've really looked at, and well, over the past 6 months, I've really felt convinced myself that it is a risk balance, but the risk of not moving is substantially higher than the risk of, you know, taking a few risks in these directions. And we heard many of the contributing partners say so, both from the library side, from the museum side. And you already see large institutions like the British Library taking the jump. The British Library released 3 million objects in linked open data, CC0, only recently. I'm not saying that, you know, all the problems will just vanish like that. It's nothing really great ever comes easy. And we're aware of this, but I really like to stress that in order to stay relevant in that linked data cloud that we've seen a couple of times today, it is a matter of moving fast. You know, I think the TED talk that you showed was early 2010?
September.
And that's when the whole idea was launched, and already that cloud starts to explode. If the cultural institutions want to remain relevant in this really important direction, we need to move soon. That's my strong conviction.
Well, I'm coming from an archive, and I would like to stress more or less the same opinion that was said here by Rosella Caffo. I think I can understand the reason why Europeana is doing this. I also agree upon the reason. You need to act. You need to be in line with social media and what has happened, and things are happening also very fast. But I think it's impossible to just have one option more or less. From the archival point of view, in Sweden at least, and you have pointed when you send out the material, that there can be a mix between content and metadata, actually. Between content and metadata. Sometimes metadata can be content. And in the archival, if you look upon the archives, that is normal, actually, because sometimes, very often, you are getting inventories coming in, which will be metadata, but actually are, at least in my country, public records. And we are not allowed to give away the rights for public records. It's only state authorities, Swedish state authorities, that have the right to own and handle this kind of information. And then we will be in the position that we have to take back information that we have already sent. And we don't want to do that. We want to open everything. That is what we're doing today. Everything that is published by the Swedish National Archives in Sweden will also be published on Europeana, 100%. And that is seems to me a little bit odd if you have to take it back again. So I think what said here by Antonella is that maybe there are also other options. I mean, I can agree upon the goals. You need to reach that. But maybe you need to have at least one, not just one, two or three options, so it's possible to cover it. I think it's what you would need to have here. And I suppose that also other institutions are in the same positions, that they want to send information to the Europeana, but they can't because the national law is against it, more or less. And that's quite an odd situation that we are in. That's why we have when we have to say, if we would like to agree upon this agreement, so to speak, we say, yes, we want to do that if it's legal and we don't know it. So we send it to the lawyers and say, okay, check this. If you go to the museums, and in my case in Sweden, the National Heritage Boards, they have not that situation because they have more or less made their own metadata by themselves about their objects. And for them, it's no problem. But I suppose for archives and also for other institutions that have this mix of content and metadata, then they are in trouble. And so there's a risk that you are missing your goals, so to speak. What you say is a saying that the good is the best sort of enemy or something like that. that would be a shame in this case, because I like the idea, I like what you're doing, and I think we shall go on in the direction that you have put on here. But how shall I do it? You help me.
Ivan.
Well, I read the discussion in Athena of the museum people about this issue, and I found it very interesting. And I think we speak about metadata, but for museum people, metadata may contain new information. So it's up to them to restrict those metadata that represent some kind of personal value, so to say. I mean, personal or for the museum. But at the same time, I think this question is very much linked to the question of use and reuse of public data. There was some talk about extending the use and reuse of public data to cultural heritage data as well. I don't know how it is now. It would be interesting to see how it is. But I think that if the reuse is enabled, then it is of benefit for all the cultural institutions. It doesn't mean that they lose something. On the other hand, they gain something. I think so. Because then the metadata will, and perhaps the data as well, it depends on the depth of the ingestion into the Europeana, but they can get extra revenues from publishing their data.
There is a more comment from Harry. Quickly, eh?
Yeah, quickly.
Because it's the second comment of the same question.
But it's an interesting question, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Um, Now, maybe just quickly, then one reaction to two questions. I do think there's a strong feeling as well. We felt that at the Open Data or at the Digital Agenda Day last week, that cultural data, if it is digitized with public funds, etc., that there is also a moral obligation to give that back to the community. So that's one side of the argument. But more interestingly, I think, besides this, is that it's a business model for cultural institutions. It's an advertising mechanism to your content. And I think commercial companies understand that very well. You know, that's why they want to join Europeana. And we had a great workshop also the other week, which investigated, it's not only about Europeana. Right? It's not about giving content to Europeana. It's about opening up your data from as a cultural institution to the wider community. And Europeana is just one channel that can do certain things for you. And, you know, by and large, again, all across the sector, we felt, you know, also from the national archivists from the UK and also from the Netherlands, felt that if... Yeah, we're talking about descriptive metadata, you know, the elementary format. There should not be a problem to really release that under open data. Maybe as a final remark then, again, I think there are lots of things to overcome, but there's an urgency here that we need to address. So we need to find solutions together. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And in finding a solution, maybe you should also take in consideration what was said today by our publishers partner in Linked Heritage. If somebody is engaging into a process that is complex, then it should be clear which is the benefit for engaging in such a complex process. So if we want many people to come quickly to Europeana, the process should be easy, and therefore the business model is easy and many participants can arrive. If the process becomes more complex, then it is more complicated to convince people to come. So this is a balance that I think it is worth to learn from the private sector, because in the public sector sometimes we forget that this balance is the core of any successful initiative. But there is a comment from Maria Teresa, who has been coordinator in Athena, so I think it works to have it lower.
I'm really sure knows what I am saying, but I think that with my experience on Athena, there are some things which must be said. First of all, generally, cultural institutions have no idea what are linked open data. I repeat this, and if you don't do at the beginning learning packages or think like this in the languages of the country, you will never get an answer, because Europeana must begin to speak also other languages, not only English, because Europeana is the language of everybody, and this is fundamental for the learning packages and also for the documentation, because nobody in except in two or three countries will accept an agreement if it is only written in English. Nadezhda Bracker of Russia said, "I will never publish, I will never accept something like this if I don't translate it in Russia." And so this, I imagine, is for France, or also for where French is compulsory. And so this, I think that this is something which must not be made by the single institution, but must be provided by Europeana. This is not a very big effort from a point of view of money, but if you want to have some results, this is the first thing. Europeana must not only speak English. Otherwise, people will never have the courage, also if they think, yes, it could be good, it could be positive, we will have some positive feedback, so, but they will never risk anything if you don't speak also their language. This is on my experience. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Sorry, the last thing, you must understand that these arguments are understood and not good only by the 2,000 people working inside Europeana or for Europeana, but institutions are much more larger and you must convince them.
Thank you. So, basically there is a need of investing in the marketing for Europeana, not said in the language of the commercial side. But suppose that we have addressed the problem of policies for aggregation, we have developed the new services, we have found a way to evolve the licenses, and everybody is continuously producing new digital content. What is happening of this data? Where are they? How to preserve? So the issue of preservation. Preservation is a fundamental aspect for the protection of the huge investment done and to be done by the member states in digitizing cultural heritage. Also by the Commission, but the share that is financed by the Commission is really a drop in the desert. Not a drop in the desert, a drop in a lake. The report of the Comité des Sages makes some proposals that, however, risks to be in contrast with the current situation within the national legislation. And in fact, the fact that already many initiatives are ongoing in the member states and in the major national institutions. So, further, preservation requires a level of performance in terms of ICT that is important. So, how to face this situation? Which is your opinion? And I want to put the question to Ivan Ronai from the Hungarian Ministry of Culture. How to plan for an harmonious development in such a strategic area?
It's a very hard question, or hard to answer this question. But looking back to 2006, where the Commission and also Council, in the Council conclusions, tackled this question, addressed this question, the question of preservation. And I think it's important because cultural heritage is something that it has been, that is preserved. Well, this is the first question: what to preserve from digital cultural heritage? And it's very difficult to answer because today we don't know what will become a part of cultural heritage. So, if we have the capacity and technology. We should preserve everything. But if we preserve everything, then we have to, later on, we have to retrieve that we wanted to preserve and we want to use in the future. So to retrieve, we have to build retrieval systems, metadata, and so on and so on. And even if we did that, so we preserved everything, we have to think about the development of technology and ICT. And that means that we have to somehow work out a system of long-term preservation. What do I mean by long-term preservation? That if we have the digital cultural heritage preserved in a certain format, let's say, but then this format becomes obsolete. We cannot use it anymore. We cannot read it, for example, or the metadata system changes. Then we cannot use the old metadata. So what to do then? Or that may happen that the whole classification system may change. Then we cannot retrieve the old data according to the old metadata or the old classification system. So I think the issue is very complex, and that's why we decided to address this topic on at the coming conference tomorrow and the day after tomorrow as one of the major points of the relationship between cultural heritage and e-infrastructures. It is obvious that preservation, long-term preservation, is a very technology-consuming and infrastructure-consuming enterprise. So it is difficult for single cultural institutions to have these this infrastructure, and so we would look at the possibilities of e-infrastructure service providers, how they can help cultural institutions to resolve the issue of long-term preservation. So tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, this will be the point.
Thank you very much. So everybody tomorrow and the day after tomorrow here still in the Szechenyi National Library, you are invited to the second DCNet conference whose main topic is preservation. And now I any comment on the preservation? But we'll have tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, yes. We have arrived to I have arrived to the last question. We heard this morning that the Comité des Sages said Europeana should be strengthened to become the, with the capital letters, reference point for European culture online. I want to pose the last question to Harry, representative of Europeana, and Shimon, representative of the European Commission. And the question is, how do you see the future of Europeana? Because if it is the reference point, it should address the different points, the financial sustainability, the policies of growth, and we heard policies for aggregation, for the new services, for new licenses, but also the relationship with the member states, because at the moment the member states are involved as advisors, because the member states expert group is an advisory body. But we are saying that the member states are contributing with money because they digitization is done by the member states, are contributing with efforts because it is a great campaign of awareness and communication at the level of the member states that can produce results of a balanced and harmonious growth of Europeana. So the relationship with the member states is an issue. But also the relationship with the other initiatives, such as the World Digital Library or the initiatives of Google. So there are many aspects that have to be taken into account. Maybe it was impossible today to hear everything, but if you can spend a few words on these key aspects, the opinion of Europeana and the European Commission will be appreciated. Who starts?
Yes, okay, just a few words. I mean, I would not like to commit here the Commission, especially on financial issues for the sort of next decade. But I think it is obviously we are where we saw the recommendations of the Comité des Sages, and now we need to really reflect on how to make sure that Europeana will be a sort of constant element of all that constellation that we are creating. But I think we should not forget that Europeana is not an end in itself, that Europeana is just one of these elements which fits into the picture of open access to cultural heritage, and that itself fits again into the picture of sort of every European digital, as Nelly Cruz puts it, so a society that can profit from the internet-powered economy in a way, and that uses to the full the ICT solutions, applications, etc. Therefore, we are really aiming at having this, what we say, Europeana ecosystem, and we are trying to make sure that there is, of course, in the beginning, and this is where the financial effort went in the first period, is to have a big content base, to have this solid base on which later on we can move forward and perhaps build new applications, etc. So until now we have the current financing programs, we really still concentrate on aggregating content, we still digitize, we help in digitizing content, and we are very much supportive of all sorts of guidelines and best practices and recommendations to make that possible, but also to make sure that similar projects in the future do not have to reinvent the wheel, that there is some sort of sustainability, because in fact the very logic of European intervention here is that, first of all, EU only puts in part of the money. So normally we co-finance various projects. That means the idea is that it will sort of kickstart a certain process, so that at a certain point in time, the EU will be able to move the resources elsewhere. So it is clear that the current image in which there is Europeana, and which of course is also co-financed by you, and then all the different projects, research projects, innovation projects, which are also co-financed by you, that is due to change over time. And I'm pretty sure that overall the funding will move from the content creation, if you will, content aggregation projects towards, as we were saying, more finding ways of building new applications around the content which is accessible through Europeana, for example. So we'll more, I think, try to link the cultural environment, so the museums and such institutions like libraries, etc., to really help them profit from that digital shift, so that they are actually active in the ICT, well, in the economy, and that they are helped by ICT developments. Now, how we are exactly going to do that, it's difficult to say. For sure, we are going to co-fund a number of projects in that direction. And since we do not dispose of an indefinite bag of money that we can carry around, we will move to shift the money away from, as I said, the digitization, the typical digitization activities and the like. You can already see that shift slowly. I think, if I'm not mistaken, this year is the last year that we are actually using the instrument of best practice network. So from the year 2012 onwards, there will not be an instrument where you could count on 80% co-funding. It will go down to 50%. And this is more or less the norm. So I would say the Commission will probably do all it can to move the co-financing towards involving the private sector a bit more, trying to put more burden on the private public-private partnerships. And this is, as I see, the strategy for the years to come. But in practical terms, it's too early to say. We will have a new financial framework from 2014. We are just very vaguely discussing the ideas. Of course, there are many ideas. I mean, in principle, you could take and have a sort of an agency, EU agency model, and then label it Europeana and try to do something around that. You could have some sort of e-infrastructure that you call Europeana. There are many different ideas, but we really are at a very, very early stage. When it comes to the involvement of the member states, I mean, we see a very encouraging process in some member states. I think in Poland there was a very big digitization program launched by the Ministry of Culture at the beginning of the year, where they financed digitization of certain chosen content. And one of the conditions is that it will be compatible with Europeana requirements. So actually the member states themselves, apart from making it visible on a national portal, for instance, make sure that it's going, that the visibility of that content, so I would say potentially the visibility of Polish culture in general, will be higher. And I think this is the way we would like to see the cooperation between Europeana and member states. And it extends to Google and other initiatives. As I say, the overreaching goal is to have that content online and to have the society and businesses profit from it. If that content is available through Europeana, at the same time through some other, for instance, some aggregators, some national portals, this is fine. In fact, this is okay with us. So this is very sort of broadly speaking. As I said, we are just digesting the sort of Comité des Sages recommendations right now. And it is clear that not all of their recommendations will be translated into policies or into legislative actions, but overall there is this idea of Europeana being at the center of a very sort of big cluster of different services and applications and public and private partnerships, etc. Let's see. I hope this is feasible. Yeah. So I hope this is in partly answers your question, but I hope, well, Europeana probably has a reflection process on its side ongoing, and they may have some more concrete suggestions on how that can be achieved.
Harry. Now standing between people's drinks and a few. No, I think this was already very well phrased. And we're very convinced that the fundamentals of Europeana are that we're an intervention that tries to achieve growth, both on a cultural level, on an interpersonal level, and on an economic level, as been stated on that sheet in 2008. Through protection of the public domain. That's why open data is so important for us. We really believe that that's the underlying fundament of a knowledge economy. How that will play out over the next couple of years, I mean, we've formulated some ideas over a strategic plan. I very much hope that the Commission does have firm plans for financial sustainability, because that's what I told my banker when I bought my house. And I do think so. I do think that there is, you know, in this ecosystem we call Europeana, the intervention is not done yet. I mean, we need 10, maybe 20 years to get to where we want to be. So I really do hope that there is more sustainability, because we need to move away from the whole project mentality into something that runs more like a business, because otherwise you can't function. So that's what we will be working for internally to realize over the next couple of years. Yeah.
I'll just add that, of course, all these changes I indicated, they're not really something that will happen in short term. It's really medium and long-term process. So obviously it will be very gradual, but just not to grow complacent and let's not stay as where we are and apply this vision to what's coming in 20 years, because this is for sure not going to look like that. So this is what I was trying to indicate. And going back maybe to the open data, as some of you may be aware, there is an ongoing also revision of the public sector information directive, and I know that my colleagues were working on that, and I think early next year there would even be hopefully a new proposal. So from what I could read from the report, there was a consultation which I think was finalized a few months ago. The archive issue was mentioned, that in fact some people who, well, mainly the reusers of that data, obviously, who are trying to get their hands on as much as possible, were saying that this has to be sort of freed, and well, there are very good arguments and there are obviously studies saying how much unused potential is in that data. So I guess it will also move into that direction, that there will be some sort of legislative measure allowing or maybe reassuring the overall all the actors that are interested in that topic, that as you said, for the moment there's a lot of uncertainty. There are many cultural institutions, archives, etc., who are not sure if they are, if it's legal for them to free up their data, if they won't lose control. So I can reassure you that all these arguments have been voiced during that consultation, and hopefully the new version of the directive will be much more adapted to those needs. Yeah.
Yes, I think that it would be nice to finish with a few words from the other panelists about the future of Europeana.
Okay, you mentioned the archives, and I grabbed the microphone directly. I suppose I'm the only archivist. No, maybe not, but there's just a few of us here. I'm very glad to hear what you say, that you will look over the directive and see that it fits better in, because that's a problem. You want to do things, but you're not sure that you have the legal right to do it. And in the archival sense, it's a little bit odd, actually, because the reason for having an archive is that you shall show the information for someone in the future. So and suddenly you're maybe not sure that you can do it. So if it's possible, it's like we talk about the agreement with Europeana. If we can find ways here, I think it will we can benefit quite a lot, actually. So I look really forward if you can take that in, because now the situation are a little bit odd, actually, and nobody is actually gaining from it.
Some words about the licenses. The problem is shifted in two parts. The first part is legal, the legal aspects. The second is to convince the institutions. Just to summarize, the other thing is concerning the agreement signed by the Italian Ministry with the Google. And we put in the text of the agreement that all the digitized resources produced by Google will be made available to Europeana through Cultura Italia, so the national portal, and to Europeana. So Europeana will benefit from this agreement.
About Europeana in the future. I would say that we have to see very much that Europeana is really a flagship initiative because it has put culture at the top of the agenda of the cultural. At the top of the European agenda. That was not something that was easy. I think at the beginning. So now I think we have the second phase of Europeana. Of course, we have a lot of risk or a lot of. Difficulties ahead. The first one would be the funding of Europeana and the stable funding, and this has a lot of to do with also how the member states will be able to commit also together and to discuss this with with the European actors. From the user point of view, I would say that now we will have also a shift. I very much base my intervention about innovation, and I think this shift is also from heritage to creation. I think that now that we have all this amount of digitized heritage in Europeana, it is possible to build on that and to build it. To create and now to make new links like intelligence between the past and the future and the present.
I think that the future, the success of Europeana, very much depends on the way how it can find the value, the added value. Compared to national portals. And I think in this direction, this third phase is a good sign, I would say that.
Well, if there is no more comment also from the audience, I think that we can consider successfully completed the conference. I would like to thank first of all Lajos for the dedication to the success of this conference. Sarah for the support to the organization, all the participants and the speakers, because we put this conference with a certain risk in the description of work of Linked Heritage, because it was at the very beginning of the project, but we managed to make it, so I'm very happy. And a big thank to European as well, because your participation made the more lively even the discussion. So thank you for everything to everybody, and maybe I leave the floor to Lajos for the last words. Thank you.